Welcome back to the Hawkins Reports, a Stranger Things podcast by LSG Media. I'm your host, Dean.
I'm Jessica.
On this week's episode, we are talking Season 2, Chapter 2, Trick or Treat, Freak. We're back, baby, for the second episode. I watched the right episode this time, Jessica, so I'm pumped.
Yeah, you watched it 1.5 times.
But I got to tell you, remember last week when I told you, or at least last episode when I told you I watched the wrong episode, and you were wondering how I could have possibly done that? But now you sort of understand, don't you, now that you've seen it?
Yeah, I can see why the opening, you were like, oh, damn, it's ending where we left off.
Correct.
But also ballsy to just come out and lead with 11. Like, that's real ballsy.
Right. But definitely,
but it could be.
Yeah, but definitely if you hadn't seen the first episode and you were an idiot like me and you watched the wrong episode, you'd be like, wait a second. I guess this is what happened afterwards. Makes sense.
It's the first opening scene, but then when you get to like Hopper making breakfast.
And I was like, okay, I guess we're going to skip ahead and fill this in later on the season.
So that's when I get a little cry.
Well, let's talk. Talk to me about Trick or Treat, Freak.
In general?
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was a really cute, really fun episode.
Okay.
I love the Halloween costumes. It's so funny to me. There's a lot of really fun stuff that happens. I love the 11 stuff. I really do. Millie Bobby Brown is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And even when she doesn't have anything to say, she steals the entire show, basically.
Right.
She's great. And she was great in this episode. I love the stuff between her and Hopper. I really do. You know, there's a lot of other things we need to talk about, but that is the real highlight of this stuff for me is how fantastic they are in those scenes together. I love it.
Yeah, the show continues to be consistently good. There's not a lot going on that annoys me. It doesn't try to do things it's not good at. It just continues to do things that it knows how to do, and it does them very well. Of course, one of those being leaning heavily on these kids and their ability to convince us that they matter and or that we believe that they believe that they're in the situation they're in. I think that takes a lot of work. And the show continues to show us that it can do that, which is great. One of the things we talked about last year when we covered the first season was, how is this going to work? Are the kids going to be able to do this? Or are we going to have to lean on the adults who are probably, just professionally speaking, better actors? But we see a consistent product from these kids, consistent ability to convince us that they feel these things that they're feeling and that we're in the situations with them. And it's just overall great performances. Outside of great performances, I think the show continues to, like I said a second ago, it's doing what it's good at. It's not trying to do too much too fast. It's the little elements that are new that are being introduced into the second season are just enough for us to digest and to accept without it going too far over the top. And that's one of the things I like about this shit. You know, it's really cool. Is there anything that happened that threw you off? Was there anything that was weird? I mean, I personally don't really have any qualms with this.
No, I don't have any qualms either, you know, per se. I understand everything that's going on. I think my struggle, my only thing that is like the Billy shit, like I don't, like he's being made into such an over-the-top piece of shit douchebag just so that he can later be made into not a piece of shit, I imagine. Is
that
how we're going
so?
Here? Oh, yeah. What else? It's so tropey. It's like tropiest of tropes.
Mm-hmm.
And that I'm not into. I'm fine with Max. I like the dynamic she adds to the group, that it's this change. I like watching how Mike feels about it as opposed to how the other kids feel about it. But the brother thing, I'm sure they're going to pay this off somehow at some point, but currently, just every time it's like him, I'm like, this is fucking stupid.
So you think Billy is a little over the top at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
He tried to run down four children with his car.
Yeah. You think so? You think he would have hit him?
No, but I think the fact that he joked about it that long and the way he acted and behaved in that scene was just like, I don't know. I'm not into him.
Too much.
And this is not going to be a turnaround like the Steve Harrington turnaround. I hate Billy.
Going to be a turnaround.
No.
Yeah.
Wrong.
With an ass like that.
I don't like his mullet face. Okay. Not into it.
I think you're in denial. I think you have strong carnal feelings towards Billy.
I wonder how old he is.
Like just most curious. Like most girls probably do. He's so douchey and just aggressive that you think you don't, but secretly you're deeply attracted to him.
I don't think so.
I think you might be. We'll see.
No.
Mark it down, listeners. She's going to have a turn on Billy at some point.
I hate Billy.
We'll see. Mark it down.
No.
Okay, so Billy's your biggest hang-up for this week, but overall you're pretty happy.
Yeah, overall I feel pretty good.
Well, let's talk about the opening. Let's talk about Eleven's opening here. Take me through this.
So we start essentially where we left off at the end of season one. You know, goodbye, Mike. And then she wakes up in the Upside Down, and now we see what happened to Eleven after she got rid of the Vanquished, the Demogorgon, and all this shit. And everybody else went back and did their own things, and we don't know what happened to Eleven. She was just gone. And now we get to see where she went. She was in the Upside Down. She's looking for Mike. It's very creepy. She hears soldiers' voices. She like caves in the wall so that she can climb through and come back into, you know, our regular world. Mm-hmm. And when she goes to go to Mike's, the FBI are there. They're saying she's a Russian spy. They're questioning Mike. And she knows she's not safe.
And
they're
telling
Mike how dangerous she is.
This is essentially right on the aftermath of them vanquishing the Demogorgon.
Yes.
Right?
Correct.
Yeah, I like this. I think giving us some insight as to how she got where she went is nice. I'm wondering, did you ever feel like we needed to see this or that we could have just had her later in the cabin? Do you think this is necessary stuff for Eleven? Well, do you like it?
I think that...
It's not a trick question.
I'm just thinking, I don't like or dislike it. Like, I don't feel strongly either way. But yeah, I do think we need to see something. I don't think we can just start with her in the cabin.
Yeah, I agree.
Because you saw her disappear to somewhere to the point where they're like, is she alive? Is she dead? That's what we're supposed to be questioning.
Yeah, I think this is cleverly done, personally. I think that we have to see... There's a year, right? Where there's a year in between what we're seeing and what happened. So
right now, we're at a little less than a year from where Will disappeared.
Right. So what's important about that is seeing how she got where she is a little bit.
Right. And we have to do that. We have to do our flashbacks and see.
Yeah. And we're also seeing this continued connection between her and Will, right? Will sort of flashing into this.
You mean Mike.
Mike, sorry.
You know
no,
what?
No, 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 Will. Will, an inexorable connection because of the Upside Down. Like he can into it and
Will
she
Byers?
Can.
Will Byers? Oh.
Will Byers.
You're trying, I thought you were talking about Mike. That's what
no,
you're
no.
trying to find.
No, no. Obviously, there's an emotional connection between them two. I'm just saying an upside down kind of connection. Will and Eleven seem to be the only two who have this weird perception of it.
Sure, yes, that
Nobody
is true.
Else does, you know? It's kind of neat.
That is true.
But it's cool. Yeah, she runs through the hallway. She finds that opening and then punches her way through it. And like mm-hmm. you said, we see her emerge and then the opening credits. They're talking about Russian spies, et cetera, things of this nature in the house. And we learn that this is a big deal, that the hunt for Eleven is a big deal, I think is what we're establishing here,
right.
Which is why it explains why Hopper is so careful and stuff with her.
Right, right.
Right. And of course, Mike's totally upset about this. He's sort of vacant as he cannot see his friend.
It's very sad.
And then the title card comes up and we go right to the cabin in the woods. We see some French toast being made by Hopper and we kind of move from there. Talk to me about this stuff with Hopper.
I love this stuff so much. I think that they have such a great chemistry and relationship and how they work together and how they both kind of need something from the other.
Yeah.
With Hopper having lost his daughter and Eleven never really having a family. And the way they interact and, you know, she wants to go trick-or-treating. He has to tell her no. But then he's like, we're going to eat candy. We're going to get fat. I'm going to leave work early. We're going to compromise. And he's like teaching her. He's like, that means halfway happy, which is also a very sad thing.
Sure.
That these two people are living their life based on the idea that like, okay, maybe we can be halfway happy. Mm. Because Hopper's not just saying that to her like, hey, this is what you need to do now. He means that for himself as well.
Right.
For sure.
I think that's an important thing to point out because the show has always been fun. It's always been a good time to sit down and watch Stranger Things. It feels very 80s, but at the same time, there is real pain to go around here. A lot of the stuff with Joyce and Will from season one, and of course, with Mike, we see And we're repeating, you know, the idea that this is, although cute and adorable, the reality is setting in, more so for Eleven because she's just a kid. And Hopper, yes, he's had a terrible tragedy. But like you said, they both need something from the other, whether or not they admit that, it's the truth. And I think when you see Hopper interacting with Eleven, this thing starts to gnaw at the back of my mind. I don't know if you feel this way, Jessica, but I start to feel like, man, this kid can never have a normal childhood.
Yeah.
Like what, I understand that, and then I want to get crazy speculative, but look, there's going to be four seasons. So I wonder what's going to become of Eleven. And it's just rough. She has to be isolated in this cabin. She has to be alone. She can't be with her friends. Right. She doesn't have any family. I mean, to say she's maladjusted is a bit of an understatement.
For sure.
Which
for
is
sure.
sad. It's a sad reality that Eleven has to face. And we can only hope that by her becoming a de facto daughter to Hopper, thus replacing his dead daughter, that maybe he can somehow help her develop in a way that where she can be a normal person in the world. But sometimes I fear for Eleven.
Me too.
Even though these scenes are touching with the ghosts, you know, she has the sheet on and the French toast and, you know, talking about we're going to do this, we're going to do that. She's got hair now and they talk compromise and getting off work early. Like all that shit you said is so cool. It's awesome to hear. She's never had this before. It's wonderful. So on the one hand, you want to celebrate that. But on the other hand, there is a distinct sadness that lingers against, or should I say, in the air of anything that occurs with Eleven, especially with Hopper.
It's like you want this happy ending for these two characters very much. Like, isn't it this beautiful thing if Eleven and Hopper can be a family, like an actual family?
Sure.
But it's not going to be that way. It's never going to have a happy ending like you want it to have.
You don't think so?
I don't think that it can.
I think it can.
You do?
Yeah.
I think it's hard.
It's definitely hard. I'm not saying it's ever going to be... She's never going to be a normal kid, right?
Right.
But perhaps someday she'll grow up enough to where she can sort of find a peace in what it is she's been through and who she is, and maybe in that find happiness in what it is to be, right?
Yeah.
I'm hoping that's the case.
But at this point, she's in a situation where she can't even see her friends. She's basically an isolated 12-year-old child living in a cabin, watching soap operas on television all day, in spending her evenings with a dad-like figure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's not going to school. She's not learning. She's not socializing. She's not doing anything that a normal kid in her situation would be doing.
Right.
So
absolutely.
It's hard.
Of course. And that's part of the setup here, right? Part of the conflict is this. So let's talk about Joyce. Speaking of people who have some trauma, that's plenty to go around.
Yeah, no shit. Oh, Dean just almost killed our cat.
He jumped weird. So Joyce is looking for Will. She has some intense PTSD. She's worried. Will's suiting up. Great costumes, by the way, which of course we saw her working on.
Yes.
Ghostbusters. Solid idea.
Of course. And Eleven's a ghost. Get it? Get it? Get it?
I do.
All right. Thanks, sir.
So great costume, Ghostbusters. Will has some intense Cthulhu-looking sketches that Mom's a bit concerned about.
Yeah, she sure is.
She asks if he had another episode. Episode. And yeah, not an episode. Maybe just too much D&D. I don't know. But
maybe.
Great Ghostbusters montage.
Oh my God, I
Lucas's
fucking
sister,
love everything about this.
Lucas's sister is adorable. Maybe that's why you only ever hang out with boys.
She is. This is the best part because I feel like last season we were like, what are Dustin and Lucas's parents doing? Do they have parents? Like, what is going on? We see the Wheelers. We know what Joyce Byers is up to. What are Dustin and Lucas's parents doing? And here we go. We have Dustin's crazy cat lady mom, whom I love. And we have Lucas's family, who I also love. Especially his fucking sister.
His sister's adorable.
She is funny as anything. I hope we see more of that sassy little girl. She's the best.
How'd you feel about the montage?
It was adorable. I loved it.
You liked it?
It was fantastic. And it's like in a show where we can do things where we talk about how this is very dark and this is very sad. And then we can do this montage scene that makes you smile so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why the show is fantastic.
Yep. Yeah, because it can change your mood rather quickly.
Without feeling like it's doing a disservice to the show as a whole.
Right. It's not compromising itself.
Right.
it really, and maybe that's what I was trying to articulate at the top of the show, and that's, it does what it does, and it does it well, right?
This is a show about kids going through something, teens and preteens, but they're still teens and preteens. Mm-hmm. So there's still this, these kids have done all this fucked up shit, but they just want to wear their Ghostbusters costumes and go trick-or-treating and have a crush on this girl.
Right.
Just like we're seeing the difference now in Nancy, who is a teenager, and now she's thinking about things and feeling guilt and not quite willing to just be like, okay, but I'm still a kid, you know? Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And she's on that tougher age spectrum, I would say, Nancy, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, the boys go to school. They argue about Peter Venkman.
Which is so funny.
Hilarious.
By the way.
Lucas is like, he comes in the end of the movie, doesn't even do anything. And the black joke thing comes up, right?
So
why? Because I'm black, I can't be Peter. And then Dustin realizes that nobody else is wearing costumes. Did I miss something here? This is obviously funny, but why is nobody else wearing a costume? Is it the wrong day? Did they fuck up? Is this ever really explained?
It's an age thing, is my best guess. I think we're still trying along the lines of these, they're still kids, but they're kids going through adult things. And I wonder if this is almost like a backhanded, like, hey, last year we wore our costumes to school because we were still kids. Mm. And this year no one else is wearing their costumes. Maybe we're not. You know what I mean?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
They're at that weird, like, preteen age that's kind of like the in between. When you're like, I'm too old to go trick-or-treating, but I want to.
Everybody wore Halloween costumes in school, though.
I don't remember school.
Were you on drugs? Do you have a Me giant
Jonathan
black
Byers.
Hole? Yes.
IRL.
Booger sugar. Well, anyway, so the kids are getting made. Who are you going to call? The nerds. That's fucking funny, man.
So cute.
That's such shit kids do.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, it's funny. Jesse Bev says, the school said no costumes this year. They mentioned it for a second.
Oh, okay.
Got it. Makes sense.
The costume designers didn't want to bother, Drunk Fist says.
Yeah. So we see Skater Girl, Max, roll by. Lucas and Dustin are quite taken with her. So they prepare themselves to talk to her, but they sort of freeze up.
It's so funny.
They wonder if she likes the Ghostbusters. And Dustin says, of course she does. As if there is no argument here.
It's amazing, like, this idea. And this is what not just kids do, but you do it too when you have a crush on somebody.
It's a confirmation
you
bias.
You idealize them so much. And it's like, of course they're going to like this thing that I like because I like them. Mm-hmm. It's so typical of, like, being young and in love. It's, like, very adorable.
Indeed. Yeah.
You know?
Yep. So, speaking of once upon a time, maybe
young and in love,
let's go to Hopper and Joyce. Let's
not anymore,
over.
They're not, but they sure used to be. And this scene, again, continues on that path for me.
Yeah.
About their previous time as lovers.
Mm-hmm.
When they shared cigarettes, a.k.a., you know.
What's a.k.a.?
They weren't just sharing. They were
continue.
Just sharing cigarettes.
What else are they sharing? Continue.
You know, things.
Things? What kind of things?
Like, bodily fluids.
Fleshy things.
Oh, man. Oh my God, the nostalgia. There's something between these two that I like a lot. I like that she goes to him to talk about Will.
Yeah.
In that Hopper.
Well, who else can she go to?
Bob, her boyfriend, her lover.
And talk about
Samwise Gamgee.
The magic dimension stuff?
Yeah, sure.
I don't think so.
He's been to Mordor. He'll be just fine.
Yes, they have a past, and yes, it's important, but I think Hopper is the only one who really can understand it because he was there.
Which continues on in this connection between the two of them that has been there for forever and all this nostalgia they have about when they were younger and when they made fun of Bob.
Quick question. Only Hopper knows about Eleven's whereabouts, right?
Only person.
Okay.
Nobody else knows.
So Hopper and Joyce get together. Will's catch is the same as the landscape. Hopper suggests that Will's episodes that are flashbacks and perhaps not nightmares. This is a bit of a red herring because one of the things I said in the first episode was maybe he has sight beyond sight. Remember I was talking about that, like making that Thundercrats joke, like but he can see something happening.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Hopper suggests this to sort of throw us off the trail that it's not in fact a flashback.
Right.
Will never really treats it though. He doesn't treat it like it's something he.
And we know it's not a flashback
because
the things that he's seeing are new.
We've never seen them.
Right.
Right. I wonder why he's trying to convince her of this. Maybe to help her relax?
Maybe that's how he feels. Maybe that's what he actually thinks it is.
Fair enough.
And I have to give Winona Ryder, like, And I know, like, all Winona Ryder really does in the show is, like, be a nervous mother, but she's actually fantastic.
She's awesome.
And this moment when she says, God, I want this to be over, is, like, painful. Mm. And I do not have children. I don't know anything about being a parent at all. But, like, the idea of her just caring about this other person so much and just wanting them to feel better is so, like, emotional to watch her portray that.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She's really good.
Yep, absolutely. Hopper tells Joyce that it will all get better in time. Of course, they share a cigarette. He also mentions the 1 year anniversary thing, and maybe that's why it's intensifying a little bit. And and that's when they recall having cigarettes back in the day, smoking in the boys' room. They share a laugh, and then they comfortably share a silence, which I thought
was
nice.
They sure do. And then they bang after. I mean, whoops, that's just in my fan fiction.
Wow. You writing some?
No.
For NaNoWriMo?
No, that's not what I'm writing for NaNoWriMo. Trust
me. Fucking 50 Shades of Hopper.
There's this new famous book. They're like, this is the new mommy porn. It was based on Stranger Things.
Oh, boy.
Anyway.
So let's talk about the lab. Our boy Owens is there.
I call him my boy Paul Reiser from Alien.
Now, I couldn't quite figure out what was going on in the scene other than there's a guy going for what appears to be an upside down walk to this like surveillance thing.
Yeah.
In the upside down, and he turns on and then the lights in some of the instrument panels go on.
Yes.
I guess it's something they had there. It got fucked up. They went in to fix it.
Yeah, this seems like everything that happens in a movie like Alien or like Jurassic Park ever where something bad is going to happen afterwards.
Right. So they have some kind of surveillance in the upside down. They set something up in there and they must use it to keep tabs on whatever's going on in there. And it got it was compromised. So this guy went in and repowered it up, I guess.
He sure did.
So that's news to everyone watching the show, right? We never knew they had technology in the upside down that they could use to monitor.
We know they were going down there in their hazmat suits.
Right. We didn't know what they were doing though. Perhaps just exploring, right? But actually deploying equipment in the upside down, that's kind of neat if you think about it.
I think it's pretty neat.
It's cool.
Pretty neat.
I wonder what they're going to figure out with all their...
Something neat.
With all their tools. So, anyway, the man fixes it up. Some insurance power up back in the lab. And then we see the tape sessions. And in these notes here, we see tape sessions of a kid. I think it's Will, because I hadn't seen the ep yet.
Oh, my God.
Because I've watched him.
Are you looking at your notes from before you had watched the first episode?
Yeah, I only made a couple of episodes. God. Really funny. That Owens is watching. Obviously, I added that. I didn't know who he was.
There's some man. He looks like Paul Reiser and he's watching videos. It might be of Will. This is weird.
I was like, man, the show's really like giving us real subtle clues here. I think that's Will, but I don't know.
That is so fucking funny. Oh my God.
Pro tip, guys, when you do a podcast, watch the right episode for what you're covering.
That is correct.
Don't do what I do. be better.
Don't be like Dean.
Nancy and Steve in the library. I think this is an important scene.
Why? Because we see Barb and the masses are like, yes, Barb, Queen Barb.
Nope.
Yes, Queen.
No, I think that was just Scott Warboy Cummings said that.
No, there are a lot of people still on the Barb train.
Like the camera says, just zoom in on the back of Barb. Fucking Scott Cummings is
sweating. Like,
he's fucking turns the lights off, reaches for the lube. He's like, yes, fucking finally. Just show me your face, Barb.
Also, this bitch looked just like Barb, too. She just needed glasses.
And then boom, boner killer for Scott. But no, seriously, I think this is an important scene in that Nancy is... she's traumatized.
She's feeling a lot of guilt now.
She should be traumatized. She's a young woman, very young, and she went through a pretty horrific experience and lost her best friend.
Yeah.
That she knows is dead because she saw her body.
Yeah.
So the guilt here is, of course, Barb's parents going off on this half-cocked mission with fucking Murray.
Yeah.
And she feels responsible, and I think that's important. I think the way Nancy feels here makes total sense to me.
I agree. I also agree. I also think that the way Steve reacts makes sense too. I don't think he's fucking just being a douchebag. Mm-hmm. I think
saying it as if I'm going to fight with you on that.
Well, I know people are going to because I know people are going to shit on Steve Harrington, but I am not today. Mm-hmm. Okay, guys? I'm just not.
Okay. Tell me about Steve Harrington's behavior here.
Barb and Steve were not friends. They don't have this connection. Steve wasn't in the upside down. Am I correct? It was just Jonathan.
Correct. Steve was fought with them, though.
Right. But he didn't go. He didn't see Barb's body. He didn't go through that shared experience with Nancy. I'm sure Nancy said to him, hey, Barb's dead. You know, he obviously knows. He also knows that they can't tell anybody because he knows what the FBI has said. He's been involved in this whole thing.
Sure.
He knows how much power they have. He knows about this demon monster. Mm-hmm. And so her saying, like, I want to tell the truth, and him saying, we can't. Like, we'll be ruined. Our families will be ruined. What he's saying is not illogical and it's not wrong. He's trying to protect her. You know, he's trying to have a semblance of a normal life despite what they went through. And I'm not saying it's wrong that Nancy feels guilt about it. I think that that is normal too. I think they're both reacting in normal but different ways. And you can't blame either of them for it.
I concur.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think this is one of those situations where I think Steve understands the repercussions of her coming clean about dead Barb, because how are you going to corroborate that? What could Nancy possibly say that's going to convince law enforcement that Barb is dead, or Barb's parents that Barb is dead? Is she going to be able to direct them to produce a body? It sounds like she would just end up drumming up a lot of fucking heartache and pain for no real resolution, because there still is no body. It doesn't matter what Nancy says. If she could say it till she's blue in the face, look, Barb's dead, I saw her body, and they're going to go, where is it? How do you know? Blah, blah, blah. I mean, I feel like there's I don't feel like any good can come from that.
Right. I feel like letting Barb's parents be like, we're going to search for Barb and do this. I feel like Nancy saying, no, I saw her dead body. She was killed by this demon that I fought, is going to be more traumatizing. I feel like this is a scenario where, and I'm not trying to shit on Nancy, and I don't want people to say I'm talking bad about Nancy, because I'm not.
Worry about it.
I'm just trying to explain it in this manner where I think sometimes people want to tell the truth because they feel guilt and they want to do it for themselves and not for the other person. Nancy is saying she wants to do this for Barb and for Barb's family, but Nancy really wants to do it for Nancy because of how she feels. She's not thinking about how it's going to affect her family, Steve's family, Jonathan's family, Barb's parents themselves.
I think
she's just thinking about how she feels.
I agree. But I also think Nancy thinks she's doing the right thing by telling them. I think somehow she thinks in her current mental state that she could possibly maybe bring some sense of peace to them and get it off her shoulders.
Correct.
Right. But you are right about her getting it off her own shoulders and dealing with her own guilt.
Correct.
I think that's at the forefront here.
For sure. And it's not wrong for her to be feeling the way that she's feeling.
Of course not.
But
it's never wrong to feel anything. You just feel things, right?
Exactly. It's just an interesting scenario. And it's so interesting to see the difference between how Jonathan and Nancy and Steve, who all went through a similar shared experience. Mm-hmm. You know, Steve more on the outside. Jonathan got his brother back. Nancy didn't get her friend back. So they were all on this different edge of the same spectrum in what they went through. And we see it through the kids too. Mm. Through you know, our Ghostbusters, how they all differently react to it. And I think the show does such a good job of exploring that, how these people have all gone through the shared experience, but everyone's version of it was a little different, and how they have gone moving forward has been so affected by that difference.
For sure.
The show does a really good job of exploring that amongst these groups.
Mm-hmm. And Nancy considers how heavy it is, and she considers telling the truth. She reminds Nancy this is a bad idea. It's hard. Just let it go. Let's go to Tina's stupid party, wear our dumb costumes, and pretend like we're stupid teenagers. Can we just do that for a night?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure what else Steve, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, maybe some more empathy out of Steve. Maybe saying, oh, look, I understand. You know, let me remind you of this. I know how you feel. And
yeah.
Something a little more empathetic versus matter of fact.
I think he's the point where he's like, nothing we can do, let's move on.
Yeah, I'm sure this isn't the first time Nancy's expressed this to him.
Exactly. I'm sure this is an ongoing thing.
Right. So anyway, back at school, Dustin and Lucas approach Max, right?
Yeah, they're the stalkers. She knows them.
Lucas and Dustin were concerned for her safety. They talk about bullies. And
this is so funny, talking to her about bullies. They're like, concerned for you.
Yeah, she could probably beat them both up. This is hilarious. She asks if that's why they're wearing proton packs. Dustin invites her to trick-or-treating. It's adorable. I didn't realize that it would be such an honor to go trick-or-treating with you, Max says sarcastically.
So cute.
She calls Dustin presumptuous, which he assumes is a good thing.
Which is also adorable.
Lucas knows better. So again, a great scene. This is something we established in the first episode, which is everybody has their thing, right? Mm-hmm. Mike has his struggles with Eleven. Eleven has her struggles with her own existence, which involves Hopper. Joyce has her own struggles. Jonathan has his own as it relates to Nancy. Steve has his own with Nancy. Nancy has her own with her own situation, everybody else. Dustin and Lucas are a bit on the fringe, right?
Yes.
They are, of course, affected, but not quite the same as everyone else. So it's important that they have something to do, which is what we're going to see sort of next week with Dustin.
I was just going to say, in the next episode, we really put Dustin in that situation.
And because we did watch the next one, because we're recording these back to back. But anyway.
We're not going to talk about it, though, now, yet.
And Lucas doing his thing, which is cool. So I like that we're getting a lot of things going on with them. They're not just side characters. They're getting their own scenes. And one of the things they're doing with these characters that I like is they're giving them their own scenes together so they may shine together yet independently without being overshadowed by a character with a major conflict.
Right.
It's not always like them two and Mike or them two and Will.
Like
or
it was
them
last
two.
Season.
Correct. It's them mm-hmm. two and them alone and them dealing with a new character, which I think is a cool way to introduce a new character.
I like this a lot. I like that, and I said this in our last episode, I like that Dustin and Lucas are getting their own storyline separate of Mike and Will, finally. I think it's great. I think it makes for, especially, like you said, there's going to be four seasons of the show.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even read that. But I think that's great because it gives us a lot to play with where we're not just focusing on these two kids. And don't forget, last season was just about Mike. You know, Will was gone. We're just learning Will now, and I'm going to, in this episode, our next episode we record, I'm going to talk a lot about the kid who plays Will because he is phenomenal.
He's great.
So yeah. Impressed by him. Because I was worried about Will becoming a main character because he was such a small character last season. And he has surpassed my worries, like, you know, what I expected in like leaps and bounds.
Yeah. Which means they made the right pick because when they auditioned that kid, they were probably thinking for future projects, right?
But also at the same time, this could have just been one season.
It's true.
One off.
It's true. But that's a big gamble.
Finn Wolfhard wasn't Will, you know what I mean?
Sure, yeah, sure. So, Eleven's watching TV, changing it with her mind powers. She may miss the TV. People are going to be aghast. We see advertisements for Terminator 1.
Love it.
She hears a squirrel outside the window and then remembers being outside and annihilating a squirrel with her telekinesis so she can eat.
That's so sad.
Damn, that is hardcore.
And then she knocks out a hunter so she can steal his coat and stuff.
Yeah. Did you get a creep vibe off him?
Yeah, for sure I got a creep vibe from him. 100%.
Yeah.
He probably deserved to be knocked out.
You think so?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I hate him.
Really?
No. I mean, I don't know him.
Think
his coat looks
You think
comfy.
He froze to death out there and died?
No, I think he woke up and was like, what the fuck? Where's my coat? I hate that kid.
Maybe.
And then he walked home.
Yeah.
I don't think she killed him.
I wonder if he'll come back.
I doubt it.
You don't think so? Nope. I think her getting spied in the woods might matter.
I don't know. Is he an actor that we know?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I like your meta thought process, though. It's solid.
Yeah, like if it was like a fucking, like, you know.
Fucking Johnny Depp? I don't know. Pick a
no,
guy.
Not even. I keep thinking about that idiot from The Walking Dead, and I haven't watched The Walking Dead, the one that someone posted a video of him in the car with his dog. You know that guy? He's like one of Negan's guys.
Oh, yeah.
But I just keep
awesome.
Picturing the guy
yeah,
in the
awesome.
Woods like him. I haven't watched Walking Dead. That's what I keep. I just watched this episode and I can't remember what the guy in the woods looks like. I picture him like Negan's guy, whom I only know from a video of him and a dog that someone posted on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
So I don't think he's coming back because I already forgot what he looks like.
Right. So quite the memory though, right? Her running into the hunter, smashing with mine bullets,
yeah.
And taking his clothes and taking off.
She can be violent.
We're seeing our pumpkin blade escalating, aren't we?
Yeah, there's some shit going on with the pumpkins.
Wait, hold on. Before we go to pumpkins, how long do you think that Eleven was in those woods before she came across him? Because he was feeding her Eggos out in that box for a while.
Yeah, but we don't know how long he was actually feeding her Eggos. We just saw him put the Eggos in the box. That's how the season ended. And we only saw her take Eggos out of the box once. And then she was watching for Hopper when he came with the second drop off, as far as we know.
I sometimes wonder.
I don't think it was too long, but I would say weeks.
Mm.
Probably.
Let's talk about rotten pumpkins.
Yeah.
Fielding complaint regarding poison fields, a pumpkin conspiracy. This is funny. The two officers joke and make light of it. And it seems fairly innocuous until the man says how all the crops are dead. Everybody who everybody who has pumpkin crops. They're all suffering. Merrill didn't just hit me last night. He hit damn near everyone.
Right.
And Lester Hopper's like, what are you talking about? Jack, Pete, Freeling, right? Rick Neary, the Christensens, all their crops dead. And that's when Hopper's like, okay, this is a problem. And he gets the addresses from this man because we're seeing another, again, this is something that I like about Stranger Things so far. I like that we get to see something affecting the outside world and something like crops. I just like that it's such a prophecy of doom, right? It's cool. It's so biblical in nature. The fields die or what have you. It's cool. I like it.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And it's something, it's like we're setting up this little subplot that's not as important now, but it will matter in the scheme of things.
It's certainly
tied. It's something we can use for things like why Hopper gets home late, and that spawns a whole like scene that's important to character building, you know? Mm-hmm. Like right now, do I care about the pumpkins? No. But I know what's happening is going to be a big part of the larger plot of what's going on with this fucking laboratory.
That's what's clever about it, too. It's not just something used as a device to make him late to create tension. It's something that will tie back into the major through line, and that's why it's good writing.
Right, exactly.
It's airtight.
I agree.
Let's talk about Billy.
He's a fucking piece of shit.
Yeah?
He's disgusting.
Come on, just look at those dreamy eyes.
I Googled how old he is. He's 22.
Okay.
IRL, if anyone's wondering.
Yeah.
Just saying.
All right.
Why is he such a piece of shit? Why is he so mean to Max? Mm-hmm. Obviously, Max is not his... Oh,
okay, let's...
I'm getting ahead to the next episode. Obviously, he hates Max and he blames her for them moving here. He's an asshole. He talks about hitting those kids with his car. And he drives fast and he's loud and obnoxious. And I saw a meme where someone said he looks like Zac Efron trying to dress up like an 80s singer or something.
He looks like Rob Lowe from St. Elmo's Fire.
Yeah, somebody has said that also.
Look it up.
He also looks like Zac Efron with a mullet.
Okay. So he's a piece of shit.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
100%.
Got it. Because he doesn't like where he lives?
Oh, he does look just like fucking Rob Lowe, huh?
Holy wicked.
Shit. I haven't watched St. Elmo's Fire in probably 10 years. That's a great movie, too. Anyways. Oh, and his name is Billy. Sorry.
Wait, I was just wishing Forever Young, not St. Elmo's Fire.
No, but I'm looking at it. Forever Young was a good movie, too. That was starring...
How the fuck did I confuse those two?
Mel Gibson.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I have funny stories about that movie.
Well,
anyway.
So he hates this town. Does that make him a piece of shit?
No, he's a fucking asshole.
I'm going to ask you one at a time.
All right, great. I'm ready.
Relax. You're out of order. Objection. He calls it a shithole. Does that make him a piece of shit?
Wait, he's...
He calls the town a shithole.
I mean, it's not really nice, but I call places shitholes.
Stop. Max reminds him that they are stuck here and that it's her fault. Does that make him a piece of shit?
That he blames her for why they're there? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you know their story yet?
It doesn't matter. She's a poor young child who didn't murder somebody, or did she?
Did he?
No, I didn't say anybody murdered anybody.
Okay.
Or it says nobody's fault. Their parents probably got divorced.
She blames him.
He's listening to Wango Tango's This Drunk Fest. Yep, that is part of the reason that I hate him.
Ted Nugent.
Tell me.
You know whose fault it is. Say it. He yells at her like a psychopath.
Yeah, oh, that makes him an asshole. Continue. You're proving my point.
And then he drives a fuckwad, and he actually can run the kids over. And then I wrote, Billy did all the coke in 83, but probably not now that that piece came out about Jonathan.
Now Jonathan's doing all the coke. That's why we haven't seen him a lot this season.
Allegedly.
He took Billy's coke.
But Dustin calls him Mad Max.
No,
her Mad Max, sorry.
Yeah, ready?
You know why I wrote that? Because again, notes from the first watch. And I was like, oh, they're making a joke because he's driving a car fast, like in the movie Mad Max.
Right, but it was a double-sided joke.
Yes.
That you didn't get the first time.
I didn't get, correct. What's Jesse saying in the chat?
Jesse in the chat is saying, we don't know their story. They were talking about whose fault it was. There's a backstory, and I agree.
Of course.
We're definitely going to see a backstory. It's going to be important. It's going to matter. And like I said, they're going to turn it around and somehow make you love Billy. But not this kid. I'm not coming around on Billy, guys. I'm going to hate him forever.
Jesse Bev, I guarantee you she will come around on Billy.
I just want you to know, no one will be sending me Jessica loves Billy fucking don't even know his last name posters.
Oh, you're getting photoshopped. Not only are you getting photoshopped when you come around on him, but they're going to have, Max is going to have done something bad. That's going to be the flip-flop here. Even though Max Billy's an ass. Yep, I think that's going to happen.
No, well, Max yep. is, But she's just a cute little redheaded girl. No, I'm a little mad at her for like flirting with my. Oh, I'm getting ahead. I'm talking about a different episode. Sorry, shit.
We can't do two in a row anymore. You're not good at it.
No, I am. That was one thing I said. That was just one thing.
All right. So anyway,
not coming around on Billy. Fuck that guy.
You're coming around on Billy.
No, never.
So he pretends he's going to run him over. Of course, he doesn't. Hopper investigates the pumpkin blight, finds a lot of dead pumpkins, finds a bunch of goo on the trees. They place a lot of evidence flags. They flag a ton of evidence here. It's really, really bad. Again.
Yeah, it's bad because Hopper is late.
Hmm.
Not yet, but it's coming.
I hope it doesn't suck.
Samwise Gamgee, favorite character in the show.
Mr. Frodo.
He is literally the caricature of annoying Mr. Mom stepdad. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yes,
it's,
I do.
It's fantastic. It's just
I like fantastic. Him a lot more than I first did, that's for sure.
Every time I see Bob, I say, I love this poor guy whom Joyce is going to devastate when she bangs Hopper.
Okay. Well, she... I kind of want to run you over in my T-Bird while you're on a bike. But, yeah. So, want to see some of my notes here when I didn't know what was going on?
Wait, what?
This is the first time I see Bob. So remember, I'm watching this for the first time.
Oh, Jesus.
I wrote, she's setting Will up to go trick-or-treating with Jonathan. She's worried, of course. Apparently, Dracula is dating Joyce. Is that Samwise Dracula? His name is Bob. I hope it doesn't suck. I wrote, he's a dork.
This is so funny. This is the first time you saw Bob.
Yes. I'm like, what the fuck? Who is this freeloader? Why is Samwise fucking Winona? God damn it.
Oh my God, the idea of you watching this and never having seen Bob and then seeing the scene, my face hurts from smiling.
Dude,
right
I was
now.
Like, you've got to be kidding me.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Anyway, I hope it doesn't suck. Jonathan isn't a fan either, but at least Will doesn't feel like he's being treated differently.
Right, and I like this.
Me too.
I like that Jonathan's like, oh, I don't get it. I just don't get it. And he's like, yeah, but Bob treats me the same. Like, he doesn't know, you know?
Yeah.
And I get that. Like, Willow doesn't know. He just comes back and there's this new guy and his mom's happy. And Jonathan is just, he's on coke. So he's like got a lot of things going on and he can't really, you know, commit to Bob in his life right now.
Yeah, for sure. But Jonathan drops Will off with his buddies.
Which he's not supposed to do. He's supposed to stay and watch him.
But I like this because this is
so
something
fucking smart.
That Will really needs to feel fucking normal for 2 minutes.
Sure, but there's...
It's a big gamble.
Yep.
It's a big gamble. There is an alternative motive here for Jonathan.
That's what I was going to say.
Yep.
This is very smart because the way this is done, and I was watching this yesterday morning,
mm-hmm.
and I'm watching it with with my friend Erin, who will listen to this podcast eventually, and she'd already seen the episode. She was just kind of, you know, around when I was watching it and talking out loud to myself like I do when I watch TV. And Will talks about how much it sucks that Jonathan has to watch him and it's not fair. And he says, Nancy doesn't have to watch Mike. And then the wheels start turning and I say, he's going to let him go by himself so he can go to the party with Nancy, of course. And sure enough, Jonathan's like, maybe you should go alone.
Hey, man, maybe you should go alone. I got a lot of coke to do.
But it's so smart because he is doing the right thing for Will.
Mm-hmm.
Will should, it is a huge fucking gamble because Joyce finds out and she has a mental breakdown and murders Jonathan probably.
It's a pretty intense reaction.
But it's the right thing for Will at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the right thing for Jonathan too.
Yeah, I agree. Don't let any of your spazzy friends handle this. Hands him the camera. And then of course, Jonathan's going to go to Tina's Halloween bash. He unfolds the flyer. Which we cut immediately to Shout of the Devil. Shout of the Devil by Motley Crue.
The music in the show is fucking fantastic.
Pretty on point. Billy's doing a keg stand. That's how you do it, Hawkins. He's real bodied up. Got a real nice body on him. All the chicks are melting.
I hate him.
Mm-hmm. Why? Because he's better at keg stands than your boy Steve? Your favorite character, Steve? You don't hate him.
Billy? I hate Billy.
You hate him like Princess Leia hates Han Solo.
No.
Yes.
Absolutely not, sir.
Oh, we'll see.
How?
We'll see.
Dare you.
Mark My word.
That made me throw up in my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I love the tracking shots in the scene where we do the tracking shot from Billy to when he gets to Steve and shit talks Steve. And then Nancy gets pissed and we tracking shot as Nancy walks away from Steve.
Yeah, it's clever.
Yeah, I just like the way it's filmed. It's really cool.
Apparently Steve was the keg king before Billy, but perhaps not anymore.
Yeah, because he used to be a douche and now he's just a gentleman.
Do we know what's Billy's costume supposed to be?
A douchebag.
Okay. I think you have to move on from douchebag. You've used it too many times.
Okay. I'm going to Google insult like douchebag. I'll just have to chat.
And you can't go on a piece of shit anymore. You gotta diversify chat, your portfolio.
Can you give me some new names for Billy that are not douchebag or piece of shit? Thank you. Get back to me soon. Goodbye.
I'm not sure how some of these people are dressed. I don't know what they're dressed as.
I just think they're being slutty like people do on Halloween.
Billy's being slutty?
Not Billy. Yeah, actually, yeah, he is. He's a slut. That's my new name for him.
Okay. Moving on, because this is going nowhere. Well, anyway, Nancy starts to drink. Steve would rather she slow down.
Yeah, look at him looking out for her. What a guy.
Yep. Same. And then we kind of bounce back to Bob and Joyce.
And at this point, we were also like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yes. I was like, what is happening right now? Highlands in the Stream. He's like, yeah, this is the best.
Like, hey, Joyce, let's dance.
Rob in the chat says, Billy is a lost boy from the future.
That is 100% the truth.
How are those maggots, Michael? You're eating maggots. How do they taste?
Yep.
Yeah. What do you mean they're worms? So good. Anyway, he makes her dance. She isn't dressed up, by the way. So what the fuck upside down world are we in their living room?
No, this is like so in character for the both of them that this makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Bob is 100% that guy who dresses up and gives out candy and acts in character and asks people what they are. And he sees a little girl dressed as a ghost. And he's like, oh, you're so scary. That's Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Joyce don't got time for that shit. Her kid was kidnapped by a fucking demon and her other kid does cocaine.
Allegedly. Okay?
Allegedly. She has got other shit on her mind than dressing up like in a costume and telling kids how scary they are when they come to her house. Okay? This, to me, sums up their characters in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
Does it also summarize their sort of incoherent lack of compatibility?
100%.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, Bob is this safe, but just like, he's like, let's leave Hawkins together. And she's like, we're not a normal family. And
when did she say that? Oh, yeah, right in the scene.
Yeah, right in the scene. Because she worries that when Will's not with her. And he says, we should just leave this town together.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, he doesn't understand they're not a normal family. And he says, it could be. And that's what it is. She looks at Bob and she sees this nerd, Bob the Brain from high school,
mm-hmm.
who always was in love with her, but she never gave the time of day because she was too fucking hot. And
way too hot.
Now she's like, all I want is stability. And someone to care and love and that I can rely on. You mm-hmm. know, her ex-husband is a piece of shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Bob could be all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
But Joyce also knows that she can never be those things.
Right.
And also that they're not like actually compatible. But Bob is very sweet and he's very sweet to her.
And she likes
and
him.
And she appreciates that. Mm-hmm. But she knows that this life that she wants that she can never actually have.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Anyway. If I ever dress up for Halloween, I'm telling you this right now. If I ever dress up for Halloween and sit on my couch and watch movies in a costume, I want you to go upstairs. I want you to grab the gun and you come downstairs and press it gently on the back of my head and just go, shh. And then, and just call it a fucking life.
He's answering the door for trick-or-treaters.
If I ever
put on
a Halloween costume. And sit on my couch trying to watch movies and answer the door in my Halloween costume and not somewhere where I'm trying to win money or with friends and family.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Then go upstairs, come back downstairs, press it gently against the back of my head, and call it a life.
I don't think there's anything wrong with dressing up in a Halloween costume to answer the door on Halloween for kids. I really don't.
If I ever...
Okay, good. Then I'll kill you. And that's on you. But if I ever decide I want to answer the door for trick-or-treaters and not hide with the lights off, I'm going to put on a fucking costume.
Just telling you.
And I'm telling you.
Come downstairs.
Okay, great.
Junk fist. Do it in front of the trick-or-treaters so they learn never to become that. Yes. I want you to open the door and say, kids, come in. We got all, you can have all the candy. I'm just sitting there smoking a cigarette and then just blow my fucking brains out.
I'm telling you right now, if I ever decide I want to answer the door for trick-or-treaters and not hide in the dark until they're gone, I'm 100% putting a costume on.
Now, I'm not saying you can't hide in the shadows outside the house and dive out of the shadows and scare the shit out of people.
I'm going to answer the fuck out of that door with a costume on. I'm going to say, hello, children. What a scary little girl. I can't wait for next Halloween. I'm putting a costume right on and answering that door.
Well,
I'm going to tell all those kids how scary they are.
Fortunately, well, I'm not saying I can't
eat
answer the door.
Pounds.
But I'm a grown man. I'm going to answer the door as a grown man in grown man clothes.
I'm going to answer
say,
the door.
Oh, what have we here? look at that. That's a little vampire. Here, have some Hershey's. Okay, toodaloo, little fuckers.
Hershey's.
Whatever.
Kids
go
come
home.
To my house, give me one thing in my candy jar. Reese's peanut butter cups. Yeah. You know why? Because I'm going to eat all of them.
Sure. Yeah, grown man, not going to put on a costume and sit on my couch. Just telling you.
Okay, well, then that's on you, sir.
All right.
Okay, sir. Fine.
Moving right along. I like how your arms are crossed as if this is a real argument. I wish this was a video podcast.
Fucking wait until next Halloween. I'll show you. Well, and then I literally kill Dean.
At least there's evidence.
Yeah. Yeah, guys. If Dean's dead, you all remember, he asked me for this. He asked me. What was I to do?
I hope it doesn't suck. Anyway.
Oh, Bob. You
wine
angel.
Makes me crazy. All the other shit.
Yeah, ew, by the way. That was the moment
Parton.
Where I wanted to kill him.
Bob is insufferable dorky, I wrote. The lads trick-or-treating. They talk about the Three Musketeers. The candy. They're talking about nougat or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is disgusting, by the way.
Three Musketeers are okay, but like not in bulk. Like if you have one Three Musketeers in the midst of other candy, that's fine.
Three
Snickers,
Musketeers is so inferior to every other candy bar with more than one thing in it.
Can I like talk about Halloween candy? I will pull that poll right up and I'm not fucking around.
So
no one's winning my candy.
Anyway, Max scares the shit out of the Ghostbusters as Mike Myers. Everyone is excited about this except Mike. Mike's not down with Max. What's Mike's problem?
He misses 11.
Mm-hmm.
This is fantastic writing also.
I concur.
Here's this new girl. She's joining their group.
The new hotness.
Yeah.
Plus, Mike's kind of the leader, so he's like kind of losing some limelight here.
I feel like Will used to be the leader, and then he went to the Upside Down.
I don't think so. I think Mike's always been the leader.
I'll have to go watch that first episode again, the D&D game.
Anyway, continue.
This is so smartly done, and this is a way to make Max not... like more of a part of the like it's so easy to add in another character and like here's a new young girl because we're not going to have 11 as the interaction in this group where the kids are like, oh my God, a young girl.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to throw this girl in. And there's a way to do it that just to do it and a way to do it that's smart. And at first when it's just like, we have a crush on this girl, we're stalking her. That's this one funny thing. But now we're bringing this deeper level where Mike can't stand her being around because it just makes him think about 11 and how 11's not around. And this is, again, it's such good writing.
I also think he wants to sort of, I'm not saying he wants to suffer, but he doesn't want to be cheered up or have fun with
this
a new hotness,
true.
Right? This is all part of it. He wants to sort of wallow a little.
Of course.
Right.
As in the chat, they say that he's a little bitch. He's a sense of emo boy and he's really going to like Coldplay. Which is a horrible thing to say, Junkfest.
Fuck
Coldplay. Honest to God.
All right. So Mike's not getting a break though, huh? He had to worry about his friend Will forever, and now he's lost 11. I mean, Mike's had a rough go.
Yeah. Everybody else just worried about Will and didn't lose anybody.
Right. Mike has not only fought forever to get Will back, he's also lost 11 in the process, which is rough.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Hopper continues his investigation.
And this is the point where the scene starts and it's dark. And I'm like, it is later than 515, Hopper.
You're in big fucking trouble,
Hopper. You're in trouble.
Oh, Hoppers. Oh, Hopsies. Going out at night, by the way.
How hard is it to set your fucking alarm for 515 and get home on time?
I like that he goes for a sidearm when he hears weird noises because
as a child.
Because Jesus Christ, cops I feel like never do this sometimes in horror movies. They're like, what was that noise? And then they get killed. But he almost shoots a kid with a cap gun.
Yeah, that would have been real bad.
would have been terrible. I must say, this is a pretty strong exercise in restraint.
Mm-hmm.
And he realizes he's late, past 515, like you said. He buys little kids candy.
That is so fucking funny when he starts driving away and he backs up.
Yeah.
That is cute.
And he takes off, of course. So let's talk about the cabin in the woods.
Well, first we do get cut to the scene where Eleven finds the Eggos. We see the scene where she first finds them in the box.
Mm-hmm.
And then we actually go back to the kids. He just Morse codes that he's going to be late.
Okay.
What? Am I missing something?
No, carry on.
Oh, I'm scared now. I'm confused.
No, you're right.
Okay.
Yeah, we see her getting the Eggos. You're right. And then we go back to the kids and they're chit-chatting.
Yeah.
What are they chit-chatting about?
So, you know, so, I don't know, but some people are having fun and some people are not having fun.
Because hey, Mike.
Some people are having their best night of the year ruined by this little redheaded temptress. Okay? Nobody can trust a ginger, people.
This is going to be like, Mike probably secretly likes her, just like you like secretly like Billy.
I do not fucking like Billy. How dare you?
It's the same thing.
I want to kill you right now.
Did you catch the 1984 Reagan-Bush sign?
Yes, I did. It was fantastic.
Crazy. Anyway, some kids, Mike sort of storms off and Will gets spooked by these big kids and they scare him so bad he flies into the upside down world.
I know, those kids are fresh.
Yeah.
They called him Zombie Boy and mm-hmm. it made me sad.
Yeah.
And he ends up in the upside down.
Yep.
Calling for Mike.
Yep. This I like that.
Bond between the two of them.
Mm.
And again, it's Mike that snaps him out of it.
Correct.
He's going to take Will home. He's bored anyway. And Max is like, what's wrong with Will?
Yeah.
And they say, well, Will basically was taken by a fucking monster and lived in the upside down, Max. And that's also where Mike's girlfriend came from. So you're really missing out on a lot of the gossip of this group.
Mm.
Got a lot of catching up to do, lady.
Come on, Max. Try to keep up.
Seriously.
Let's go back to this amazing Halloween party.
It's not a good Halloween party because people aren't in costumes enough.
I know.
I don't like it.
Yeah. Well, sorry.
It makes me upset.
You sound very upset about something pretty sure.
Because awesome. If it's a Halloween party, just put your characters in Halloween costumes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that so much to ask?
Right.
That's all. Anyway, Jonathan has arrived.
Yep.
There's and some he finds a girl.
There's some lawn barfing. There's a chick dressed up. Who's she dressed up as?
I don't even remember. I just remember her name was Samantha, wasn't it?
Yes. Good memory.
Googling
Samantha. I think it's Samantha. But I think he says, are you supposed to be somebody from Kiss? I think he says. Right?
Yeah. He says like, oh, yeah. He does. He says something about Kiss, which mm-hmm. is funny. And her reaction is funny.
Girls on film play. Plays in the background. Jonathan goes inside. Samantha's her name. Nancy, all kinds of drunk and sloppy. Steve tries to intervene. It, of course, goes poorly, as it always does when you try to intervene on your drunk friends. Speaking from experience.
Wow.
Steve and Nancy argue about drinking. Nancy calls Steve bullshit.
Oh, she's... I just figured out who she is. Sorry.
Who?
It says, Jonathan says she's from Kiss. She is somebody from the British punk band Susie
and the Banshees. Susie and the Banshees. Oh, that's awesome. I didn't catch that.
The person who wrote this article, a Vanity Fair, wrote, I'm afraid, Jonathan Byers, that she's too cool even for you.
Yeah, that's a good pull. Damn, that's really good. That's a great costume.
Yeah.
Susie Sue.
I just like her because she's cute and she actually seems like she's interested in Jonathan. And I was like really excited for Jonathan to meet a girl who was not, didn't have a zillion issues and a boyfriend.
Yeah.
But apparently not.
Apparently not.
That was not going to work.
Jesse says that Nancy played a great drunk. Rob and Jesse Bev say that. I totally agree.
100% she was fantastic and on point. I have been that girl in the bathroom before, so I know.
Powerful.
Yeah, she was great. It's hard to, I don't think it's easy to play a good drunk because I think it's really easy to overplay it.
Mm-hmm.
And she played it perfectly.
So there's some important shit here. Obviously, when people are drunk, they say dumb shit. A lot of shit they don't mean. Some stuff they do.
But most of it they mean somewhere.
Okay. If that's the case, did you think that Nancy was unhappy with Steve in general?
Yep, 100%.
How come? There was no evidence to support this.
No, I disagree.
Really?
I feel like the way they have interacted this entire season, there's been evidence to support this. All two episodes? Yeah.
Okay.
And I also feel like last season we saw that through her relationship with Jonathan. And I think that, and we talked about this last season, the reason why she ended up back with Steve is because her shared experience with Jonathan. Jonathan got what he wanted back and she didn't. I think that's the only reason why she didn't end up with Jonathan.
But it's been a year.
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
I think over that year, Nancy has become more and more resentful of the situation of Steve, of the fact that he's not as emotionally invested in this Barb thing as she is. Just in the scene when they're talking in the car about him going to school, and he's like, maybe I'll stay here with you. Whenever he's like, I love you. She is so emotionally not into him that I feel bad for him.
Yeah, I agree. Good call.
Because he is so emotionally into her to the point where it's almost like he's deluding himself. And it's kind of sad. Because he used to be the keg king.
He used to be the keg king. He looks like John Ralphio.
I'm sure
he's just a bitch.
Seriously.
And Billy's moving on his keg king turf.
Of Billy and Nancy hook up,
Billy,
I will kill myself.
Billy. Come on.
Anyways, yes, I 100% think that the shit that she said to Steve, she meant. All of it.
Yeah. Bullshit. You don't love me?
No. And she says it's all bullshit. And Steve is literally just trying to take care of her.
Yeah.
Leading up to this. And yes, he leaves her by herself at the party when she's wasted drunk, which was a very bad move.
Yeah. Anyway, leaves her at the party. You don't love me. That's bullshit. Steve storms off past Jonathan.
Walks past Jonathan, doesn't even look at him.
Right. Which means they must not really be on speaking terms, or maybe he's just pissed off.
I think they are on friendly enough speaking terms. He knows. I just think that he's pissed. I don't even think he necessarily knows this Jonathan. I think he is just like, my girlfriend, whom I'm in love with to a point where it's kind of crazy because she does not like me at all, just told me she doesn't love me. I'm probably going to go kill myself and listen to Blood Flowers. Except that I think that came out in the 90s, so you probably can't listen to that.
Try 2000s.
Holy shit. Blood Flowers, cure is not on point right now.
Blood Flowers, I'm going to say, is 2004.
Well, I fucking love that album. Watching Me Fall, one of my faves.
The year 2000 exactly. I'm 4 years off.
Okay, so I guess unless Steve Harrington gets into a time machine, you can't listen to Blood Flowers.
Nice try.
Bloods.
Yeah, he might listen to Disintegration, but that might be a little late too. Also, a good album.
Oh my God.
The best album. The best Cure album is Disintegration, yeah? 1989. Still a little late. It's not there yet.
I love Blood Flowers so much, though. It's very hard for me.
You're of that age. All right, ready?
For what? Yeah, I am ready.
Let's talk about Will and Mike, because this is great. A great scene.
Oh, yes. You want to go? You can go. I feel like I've talked a lot.
You have. I've just been in cruise control this whole up.
Like, this is great. I'm glad I watched this episode and didn't know what was going on.
Will and Mike chat about Will's experience. I love the description of calling it a Viewmaster cop between slides. This is great.
Fantastic.
Will describes the noise, describes the huge shadow in the sky. It was alive and coming for me. Mike asks if it is real. Will doesn't know and asks Mike not to tell the other kids. Mike says 11 would understand. She always did. Mike describes thinking he is always seeing her and that maybe he's going crazy and that perhaps they'll go crazy together. It's a very touching moment. So this is cool. This scene starts out with Will sharing his experience, confiding in Mike. And then the second half of this conversation is Mike confiding in Will, his feelings sort of for 11 in a roundabout kid way. Always seeing her, always thinking about her, that kind of stuff.
Correct.
And in how they are still very close. It's nice to see this moment out of Mike. I think we needed this moment out of Mike. We needed to be reminded that he still loves his friend Will, and that he's very close to his friend Will, and that they are going to support each other in going crazy together. I thought this was great.
That's the thing, is they both have this emotional thing far beyond their years that they're dealing with. And they know that the others won't understand.
Right.
And that they can confide in each other. And I like this because we've seen so little of Will interacting with the group. And this is when I start to get on this bandwagon of, in season one, there was Will, but Will didn't matter as much. It was about finding Will, but Will himself was not important, really. Like his character, his development, it didn't matter in season one. But it matters so much this season. And I was so worried because this kid didn't do anything in the first season that he was going to crash and burn. And this is the start of, I feel for this kid. And I think the job that he's doing is really good.
Mm.
I believe him. And I love these two together. I love that they have each other to share with and that they understand that Lucas and Dustin don't really get it as much.
Yeah, for sure.
It's very well done.
Good shit.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to the next scene.
When Jonathan kidnaps Nancy, rescues her. Just kidding.
So, yeah. Let's talk about Tina's Bash a little bit more. Nancy's asleep in her car. Jonathan goes for her, picks her up, takes her inside, tosses her in the bed, and takes her boots off real slowly.
I know, what a creep with a foot fetish. Just kidding. Whoa. Why am I shitting on Jonathan?
Whoa.
I feel bad.
Reel it back in. Anyway.
Anyway.
For sure flipped this bitch over, by the way, so she doesn't barf and drown like a fucking rock star.
I was thinking that, like, tilt her to the side, because yeah. She is going to vomit forever.
So, puts her to bed. He's very sweet. She says Jonathan kind of wakes up. She'll never remember that, of course. Passes back out.
Oh, but she does wake up and see him.
Jonathan leaves.
Like the gentleman he is, he doesn't even put her in pajamas because he doesn't want to, you know.
Yeah, well, he's going to do a bump. She's getting a little sleepy.
Jonathan Byers is going to have a hard rest of the season with LSG Media because All we're going to do is talk about him doing coke.
Got to do a little bump.
Anyways.
Yeah. So, of course, this is, what do you think of this scene coming on the heels of Steve's blowout? I mean, we're seeing clear differences in their relationships right now. I mean, this is kind of a bit manipulative of the show to go, isn't Steve a douche?
Very manipulative.
Right.
Because I don't think Steve is a douche. I think he was a little bit of a douche, but I also think he was reacting in a way that I think that a lot of normal, non-douchey people would react in that scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? You've never wanted to drunkenly just leave me in a bathroom somewhere.
Sure.
Probably.
Well, many people I've left behind.
That you've left behind?
Yeah, fuck them.
Yeah, sometimes like you have a drunk friend.
Some days you just gotta cut them loose, man.
And they're so drunk and you have to say, I love you. But I can't.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
Just saying. I'm normally the drunk person that people are saying I can't do. But, still.
I think you've made it abundantly clear that you're that person. They all get it. You're really cool. You like to party. You're fun.
I actually don't party that
much.
They
get it. You don't have to keep playing like you're cool.
But I don't even party well.
I'm just fucking with you. Hey, Hopper's in trouble.
Oh, my God. I love this.
Yeah.
He's so sweet in the scene. I can't even stand it.
These are again standout scenes. Hopper is great. What an unexpected pleasure he was in the first season.
I know, I love him so much.
And he continues to be great.
Eleven doesn't let him in and he like begs her. He's so upset and it's so obvious, even though he's saying shit like, oh, I'm gonna freeze to death. Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He's upset.
Yeah.
And she finally lets him in and she's locked in the room and he says he's sorry. And all I can think is that Hopper is probably the type of guy who does not often say those words.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
He strikes me as the type that if he says I'm sorry, he really fucking means it.
Man after my own heart.
And just like when he's sitting, he's like, I'm gonna eat this candy, I'm gonna get fat. It's not healthy. I could have a heart attack. You know, he's trying to, but like, he loves her. At this point, we're thinking like they've spent what? Not a year together, but probably fairly close to, you know.
I don't doubt he loves her.
And he's sorry. He knows he hurt her and he's upset.
Mm-hmm.
And so is she, of course.
Let's talk about her. Because this is wild. When she blindfolds herself, sits across from a static channel, we hear echoing voices, and then boom, she's in the upside down. Yeah, this is fucking cool.
She's figured out a way to do this without the tub.
Yes.
She's honing in on her powers.
Her psionic ability, her psionic levels are increasing with experience points.
Mm-hmm.
She's getting better at it. She's so powerful now. It's crazy.
Oh, Jesus.
But I like this. I like the way they shoot this with Mike sitting in her little de facto bed, makeshift bed. I don't know why I keep saying de facto.
I don't know why you say that either.
Makeshift bed. And I like how we see her trying to interact with him and she can't quite do it, but we almost get a sense that he can feel her presence here.
Mm-hmm.
So this is almost like a weird astral projection kind of, it's cool, man. I think this is really neat.
Me too. It's just sad that, I don't know, when he walks away, her cry, it's so sad.
The pull away on the bed just disappearing into the inky black.
Mm-hmm.
And then her pulling off the blindfold, nosebleed, and she's very upset, crying, very, very upset right now, which makes total sense to me.
Yeah, I agree. She misses, she has no interaction with anyone except Hopper. She misses her friend.
Mm.
You know, she doesn't understand anything that's going on other than these things that she sees when he's on the walkie and she's trying to get him on that static channel, you know?
Right. And then, of course, we have this moment with Dustin at home. He thinks he hears Muse in the trash. The trash bangs. He grabs the proton gun, which
that's
is
my favorite
fucking amazing
thing. He grabs a fake gun. Like, this is not going to help you, Dustin.
If oh, I will so it, it will be so.
It's so cute.
He just says, shit, 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 shit. He lifts the garbage lid up. Holy sh! Cut the credits, and mm-hmm. then we're done. So this is really cool. You know, it's we see this... we see like a cool introduction for something new. Jessie Bev made a really great point in the chat, and she said, it's like she's a prisoner again.
Yes, It is. In a way where she's trying to be, they're trying to protect her, like Hopper is for sure, but she is.
It's very good. Very good.
Very
point.
Sad.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's the end of Trick or Treat, Freak.
Yeah.
What'd you think of that episode? I know it's fun to talk about. What'd you think after talking through it?
It was a fun episode. Like, yeah, you know good. What I mean? There were a lot of good character building things. There wasn't a whole ton of stuff that happened. It was, I think, a lot more establishing our
set
relationships
up,
between people and to set things up for the future. You know, we have an idea now where everyone stands, and that's important.
I concur. Good shit. All right. Well, we are going to bid you good people adieu, and we will see you next time for the fourth episode called The Pollywog.
Third episode
called The Pollywog. Whoopsie. I'm all fucked up.
I know.
So until then, we'll catch you guys on the flip side.